Friday night football is an American tradition. This high school game on a cold evening in California is a long way from the Super Bowl, but it's still serious business for the teams on the field and the fans in the stands. Tonight's game is between Novato High School and home team Justin Siena, known by their nickname, the Braves. Justin Siena also keeps another American tradition, one that figures prominently on a merchandise stall behind the stands.
Tell me what we've got here.
Oh gosh, sweatshirts, t-shirts, jackets. We have ponchos when it's rainy and scarves. And then our rally towels, of course, have power on it. So we try to get the kids to use those because that shows our power logo.
Power is the name of the school's American Indian mascot, one of 180 such mascots in California alone. Like many high schools, Justin Siena stopped using an American Indian mascot in the 90s, but then, surprisingly, they brought it back. On this program, we're delving into the controversial and sometimes painful issue of American Indian sports mascots. I'm George Lavender, and you're listening to Making Contact. When you think of the controversy around American Indian mascots in sport, there's probably one team that comes to mind. We're going across the country to Washington, D.C., where reporter Alice Olstein has been following the campaign to change the name of the city's football team. And just so you know, the following report does contain what we'll call the R word.
It's a cold Sunday afternoon in Northwest Washington, D.C., and I'm in a half-empty, dimly lit dive bar called Chief Ike's. On one wall is a bigger-than-life-size mural of Chief Ike himself, former President Dwight Eisenhower, wearing a native feather headdress and brandishing a golf club like a spear. Perched on wobbly bar stools with cracked leather, drinking generous glasses of beer, are a few dozen diehard fans of DC's professional football team.
How long have you been watching the games?
I've been watching the Redskins for a long time. Yeah.
Way too long. 30 plus years of my life wasted.
I've been a fan for a long time and will always be. I'm very loyal to them.
As the home team struggled that Sunday to hold a slim lead over the Atlanta Falcons, the fans lamented the team's long losing streak, the star quarterback's lingering knee injury, the embarrassing feud between the head coach and the owner, and most of all, the controversy over the team's name and mascot.
Radio, TV, people on the street, you know, everybody's sort of talking about it.
Michael Wright comes from Akron, Ohio, where, in his words, football is king. A longtime D.C. resident and fan of the Washington football team, he says he only started hearing criticism of the name this past summer, but it immediately resonated with him.
Well, it's just discriminatory, you know. There's a lot of bad names around. They don't need to be called. To the Indians, needless to say, they got wiped out. That is not a name they want to be on.
Other fans, like Jerry Neuwirth, are on the fence.
I can understand in a way how some people would find that offensive, but I haven't met anybody personally from where I'm from, for example, that's upset about the name.
While others, like 26-year-old Sadie Macarecci, are firmly opposed to changing it.
It's what I've known for my whole life.
Sadie, who grew up in D.C. and whose parents are also fans, says she thinks the conversation over the name has been blown out of proportion.
It's kind of upsetting to me because I never thought of it as anything but a team that I love, so it's kind of unfortunate. But if it's offensive to people, then, you know, let's stop talking about it and just change it.
So you wouldn't mind it?
I would mind. I mean, that's a whole wardrobe I have to change. 20 years.
Sadie is wearing a white t-shirt with a shiny print of the team's logo on it, the dark red profile of a Native American man in a feather headdress. She says it's her lucky shirt, but the luck wasn't doing the trick that particular Sunday.
Nice fancy.
As Sadie's team racked up more and more losses this season, the decades-long campaign to change the team's name built momentum and grabbed the attention of sports fans and political leaders alike. A coalition headed by the Oneida Nation, who live in New York State, has commissioned studies on the damaging impact of the name on the mental health of Native Americans and funded radio and TV ads like this one calling for it to be changed.
This word, the R word, is a dictionary-defined racial slur that continues to have negative cultural, psychological, and social effects on Native Americans.
Tribal leaders, civil rights luminaries, TV personalities, members of Congress, and even President Obama have publicly declared their support for the campaign over the past year. But the campaign has made no progress with the team's billionaire owner, Dan Snyder. When asked by USA Today in May if he'd ever consider changing the team's name, Snyder responded, "Never. It's that simple." Then, in an open letter to the team's fans in October, Snyder defended his unwillingness to change the name, calling it a badge of honor and a, quote, symbol of strength, courage, pride, and respect. But those pushing for a change, including congressional aide Fili Sagapulutele from American Samoa, say it's not up to Snyder or the general public to determine what is or is not offensive.
Let me be clear. This is not a popularity contest. It is not even about sports. This is a moral issue that reaches far back to a time when Native Americans were not only considered outcasts, but deemed enemies, rebels, and traitors by a colonial government. The only sporting involved was the game of hunting and killing Indians like animals for money.
Sagapulutele showed reporters a copy of a Minnesota newspaper clip from 1836, which read, quote, "The state reward for dead Indians has been increased to $200 for every redskin sent to purgatory." In 2013, pushed by American Indian advocacy groups, several members of Congress introduced bills that would revoke the team's patent on the name, citing a 1940s-era law that bans federal protection of any trademark that, quote, "disparages any persons, institutions, or beliefs, or brings them into contempt or disrepute." It's the same law on which Susan Schoen Harjo has based decades of lawsuits and campaigns. At an event on Capitol Hill in December, the Muskegee Indian activist and longtime D.C. resident explained the crux of her case.
The federal government, when it provides trademark protection, it's saying this is something that we give our imprimatur to, that we prove, that we say is good and valid, and that we say is not disparaging, does not hold up people to contempt, does not hold people in disrepute.
Even if the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office sides with Harjo sometime in the coming months, the team will still be able to keep using its current name. But the federal government would no longer be in charge of seizing counterfeit merchandise and otherwise enforcing the team's trademark, which could take a bite out of the profits of the team and its owner.
So if you take away those trademark protections, you strip away the exclusive right of making money from this, then you have taken away the incentive for the team owners to maintain the use of it.
Now, it's a waiting game for activists as they watch both the court and the Non-Disparagement of Native American Persons or People in Trademark Registration Act, which has been stuck in committee in the House of Representatives since March. But on the local level, there has been action.
All those in favor of the amendment in the nature of a substitute say aye.
Aye.
The D.C. City Council unanimously approved a resolution last year calling the team name racist and derogatory and urging the team's owner to change it. Councilmember David Grosso, who wrote the resolution, plans to introduce another that goes even further. He said the council should take advantage of the leverage they currently have, since the team has expressed interest in moving from its current stadium in suburban Landover, Maryland, to a new site within D.C. itself, a move that would require approval from city officials and likely a slew of tax breaks, improved parking, roads, and other incentives.
They want to come back to the city and they want to be a part of our community again. They have to change the name. And I'm not willing to even begin discussions about spending any public money on a stadium that has that kind of a derogatory name associated with the team that would play there as their home base.
The public pressure has had some effect on Snyder. In December, he flew his private jet, emblazoned with the team's logo, to New Mexico to meet with the tribal council of the Pueblo of Zuni. The team's spokesperson, Tony Wiley, told the Washington Post that the visit had nothing to do with the name, but was instead focused on what he called real-life issues, such as poverty, access to education, and health challenges. This mirrored an argument I heard quite a bit in the bar that Sunday, that those pushing for the name change should focus on more important battles, both for Native Americans and D.C. residents. But Suzanne Harjo and others with the campaign say those who have been called the team's name to their faces, whose children have been bullied, understand the importance of the issue and its connection to inequality, violence, and other more important issues.
I know what it is to raise children in this atmosphere, and it is toxic. It is absolutely poisonous to the health and well-being of our young Native people in this area. And it's brought on by this, it all flows from this despicable name, because people feel like if they can call you a bad word in public, they can do anything else to you. Your rights don't matter at all.
Back at Chief Ike's bar, even fans who say they support a change have conflicting opinions on what the name should become.
I've heard the Red Tails, which would be honoring the Tuskegee Airmen, and you wouldn't have to change much about, I don't know, the song or whatever, just the way that people...
Or the colors.
They could maybe be the Washington Braves, but again, is that okay? I don't know. I don't know where the line is. Warriors, Washington Warriors, is that offensive?
I said, hey, call them Skins and let's just move on. Just move the Redskins and just call them Skins. That would do it. I'd be a fan no matter what they call them. They call them the Bulldogs, you know, what, who cares? The name is one thing, the team is another.
The Washington football team lost by just 1 point that Sunday and went on to lose several more games, leading up to the head coach being fired in January. The same fans who Riley told me that their loyalty brings them back week after week despite the losses said they wouldn't be scared away by a different word on the scoreboard.
Regardless of the name, I'll be happy. Still root for them. They'll still be terrible. I'll still root for them.
Alice Olstein reporting there. Here at Justin Siena High School in California, the football game has just kicked off between the home team and Novato High School.
That's going to be enough for our first down break.
It's a cold night, and the school's American Indian mascot, Power, is here to get the crowd warmed up.
How's it going in the suit?
All right.
Warm in there?
Extremely.
In fact, it might be a little too warm. At halftime, he heads off to have a break, so I take the opportunity to find out more about the costume.
Who is the person in the Power suit tonight?
Dawson Delgado.
It's pretty difficult for Dawson to see with the costume on, so he's helped around by two other students, Paul Brown and Sam Hoth. I ask them to describe the costume.
From the toes up, I guess, he's wearing moccasins. Then up from that, there's our logo on his chest. It's an arrowhead. Then the headdress, he has sort of a collar, which is supposed to represent shells around his neck, which is what the WAPO used as currency. On his face, he's got face paint in our colors, which is just sort of like athletic paint would be, just two lines. The headdress, which is probably the most distinctive part, it's a flicker, it's called. It's a band of reeds that goes all the way across his forehead. And on the band, we have these diamonds on the reeds on his forehead. And those are meant to represent the core principles of our school here, the LaSallian core principles, which are...
Faith in the presence of God, respect for all persons, quality education, concern for the poor, and social justice.
While the school's current mascot is supposed to be more representative of the local Mishowa WAPO tribe, it hasn't always been that way. Earlier mascots were, well...
It was awful.
That's Robert Jordan, the school's president and CEO.
We looked through yearbooks of the early 70s, and you can just imagine everything from kind of the Cleveland Indians look. We had cartoon images, I mean, traditional plain Indian images.
Widespread criticism of designs such as these led a number of high schools, including Justin Siena, to suspend the use of their mascots in the 90s. But a few years ago, the school decided to revisit the issue. Jordan says he was prepared to change the mascot entirely, but decided to first try speaking to the tribe whose ancestral land the school is on.
It was a cold call. I literally went on the internet and found the name of the tribal council president of the Wappo Indians, and I just called him.
And I said, let's talk about your project.
Scott Gabaldon is chairman of the Mishawel Wappo tribe. I met up with him at the tribe's office in Santa Rosa, California.
He basically said, really respectfully, he said, we want to make a mascot. We haven't had one since the early 90s or mid-90s. And if you would like to be part of the project, we will put together a mascot. If your tribe doesn't give us our blessing, we won't do it at all. I said, well, if you do it in a respectful way and make sure the mascot is something to be honored, then I have no problem doing it.
Among the group of students who helped redesign the mascot was Lupe Padilla Aguayo.
We did a lot of research. We worked with a tribal art. We worked with a graphic designer. There were sketches. There was, we don't like this, let's go with that, or how about this, or that's not something that we want to portray. And then after that, we worked with a costume designer. Costume designers sent us sketches. The tribe was involved in every step of the way to make sure that we were honoring them.
They gave me a prototype, which I didn't like at all. They had the feathers going straight up in the air, more like an Aztec Indian. It didn't represent the Native Americans in the valley at all. So they made some tweaks and changes, and they came up with what they came up with.
What they came up with not only satisfied Scott Gabaldon, but also former students like Jenny Gass, who brought her two young children to watch the game against Novato.
What do you think of the school mascot?
I love the school mascot. Very traditional for me as an alumni, and the kids love seeing him.
And would you have been disappointed if they had chosen not to use a Native American as a mascot?
Yes, if they had moved away from the Brave, I would have been very disappointed. For example, we're playing the Hornets right now, and I just think the Brave has so much more patriotism to it. It's really our founding people who are here at the very beginning, so I think that's much more meaningful than an eagle or a hornet.
Current students wanted to point out that working with the tribe had helped them change not just the way the mascot looked, but also how it was seen.
We don't do the tomahawk chop because that would be
like what you see maybe at a Redskins game or even a Atlanta Braves game. They wave their hands as if they were throwing a tomahawk or something, and they chant, I guess how they thought Indians would chant. And the tribe told us, frankly, that they didn't use tomahawks and that it was offensive for them if we did that. So we conscientiously, as a student body, choose not to do that. And we're just as spirited without it.
A lot of that stuff is Hollywood.
Again, Scott Gabaldon.
How, you know, when they greet each other, that's a Hollywood thing. So, and then, you know, hitting your hand on the mouth going woo-woo or whatever, that's all Hollywood. So we didn't want anything Hollywood over there that wasn't from our area.
Ultimately, Gabaldon says he was happy with the final design, and so were most of the tribal members, or almost everyone.
Well, the only one that really had a big issue with it was my sister Christy. But you know, and trying to turn her, she doesn't like any type of mascots at all. So when she found out that I was doing a mascot for a school, she wasn't happy about it. But once she's seen the way it was done, she really hasn't said anything after that.
Before I left Justin Siena High School, there was still one last question I wanted to put to Robert Jordan.
Some people say, regardless of whether it's a positive image or a negative image, Native Americans should not be used as mascots. What would be your response to that?
I would say that I think that you have to be sensitive to the local tribe as we were. Do we have to be sensitive to these issues? Absolutely. But we have to talk about them, and we have to talk directly with those involved and who are most likely to be offended. We did it right. I really believe that.
We'll be right back. You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. Because of generous support from listeners like you, this show is distributed for free to radio stations in the US, Canada, Australia, and South Africa. To find out how to donate, download shows, or get our podcasts, go to radioproject.org. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Our handle is making_contact. campaign to change the name of the Washington football team has been growing, helped in part by an online campaign using social media and videos like this one.
My name is Carrie Hawk Lassard, and I'm United Remnant Band Shawnee.
My name is Ron Lassard, and I'm Mohawk.
I am not a caricature. I am not a mascot.
I'm not a caricature or a mascot.
I'm not a mascot.
I am not a caricature, and I am not a mascot.
I am not a caricature or a mascot.
I am not a caricature or a mascot.
I'm not a caricature or a mascot.
This video was created by artist and activist Greg Deal, a member of the Pyramid Lake Paiute tribe. He spoke to Making Contact from his home in the Washington, D.C. area. I began by asking him why he created the video.
I am a human being.
One of the things that was really frustrating is when this conversation began and started kind of taking a national platform was that nobody was bringing Indigenous people to the table. And that really burned me because Indigenous people have had other people speaking for them for really the whole of the existence between non-Indians and Indians, you know, since first contact. So I created the video because I wanted to illustrate a couple things. I wanted to illustrate that there are Indigenous people that have this opinion, and that it actually shows that there's multiple Indigenous people that are offended. And I didn't, good grief, I didn't even get really a fraction of them. And that it also shows the diversity and the beauty of Indian country. You know, this idea that you have to look a certain way and talk a certain way and dress a certain way to be decidedly Indigenous is a load of crap. And I wanted to show that diversity as well.
Various media outlets, including some local outlets in Washington, D.C., as well as some national outlets like Mother Jones, have decided to take a position of not using the team's name. What's your view on that?
I think it's a good thing. I think that the conversation still needs to be had, regardless of the use of that name or not. I think the conversation is the most important aspect of this entire process. I think you can look at the Black community and you can say that they own the N-word, and there's different schools of thought of whether or not that's appropriate, but there's a universal acceptance that using that word outside of the Black community is inappropriate, and it's because of ownership. There are sports teams that are like all Indian sports teams that use terms like redskin and that's like their mascot. And so I know that there's been some sports fan teams that have said, hey, you know, well, there's high schools, you know, out near Indian country or out in, you know, Arizona and they're the Savages. You know, so if they can use it, then we can use it, which I think is a really interesting point because I think it comes down to ownership.
And I'm wondering what your opinion is of teams that have a relationship with local tribes. We've been hearing on this show about a team in Napa, California, where they redesigned their school mascot in collaboration with one of the local tribes. There's other teams, other examples like the Florida State Seminoles. What do you think of those kinds of relationships?
I'm not arrogant enough to presume to tell the Seminoles, you know, how to handle those types of things. But I can sit on the outside and say that the Seminoles, the Florida State Seminoles, still perpetuates this constant miseducation of what Indigenous people are. I think that there needs to be some progression of thoughts. I mean, besides animals, Indians are the most important or the most prominent mascots out there. And so, you know, it we're right up there with animals. It'd be nice to be able to have a comparison that was a little more humanizing than that.
And it seems like in a lot of your artwork, you're documenting and reflecting back to people a lot of those attitudes.
A lot of my art kind of works on the social end of being Indigenous, pop culture and, you know, just all the different pieces that go into that. I think that there's actually a lot of content to be able to poke fun at the way that popular culture views and describes and talks about Native Americans. And so that's a lot of where my work is at, because a lot of my experience as an Indigenous person has been very social. I grew up in a neighborhood that was, you know, predominantly white, and that experience was, you know, hyper realized. So that's where I am with most of my work.
And one of the projects you've been working on is called The Last American Indian on Earth. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, The Last American Indian on Earth is essentially me taking the stereotype and going into public and documenting the way that people react and interact with it. I'm mic'd up. I have a friend that, you know, takes photos and actually takes video as well. and we can sort of document the interaction that people have. About 90%, maybe 80% of the people I come into contact with are decidedly racist and bigoted. And a lot of it may have to do with, you know, when I've done it in Washington, D.C., it seems to be more prevalent than anywhere because there is a connection with the sports team. But I've been up in New York and I hear people say how. I hear people, you know, call me Redskin. I've heard people, slap their hand over their mouth, the blah, 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 you know, thing. And so there's a gut reaction that happens. So the film that I'm working on, I think, will shed some light on the way the gut reaction that people have about Indigenous people. And that raises questions about, you know, what your average American thinks of an American Indian and like what's their gut reaction.
I got to ask, why did you choose that name? Why did you call it The Last American Indian on Earth?
It's completely sarcastic, because obviously I'm not the last American Indian on Earth, but a lot of times that's how people kind of treat Indians. Like,
I saw the name, it made me think of Daniel Day-Lewis. We're going to hear a clip from The Last American Indian on Earth. Tell us what's happening in this video.
So I am in Washington, D.C. I'm walking on 7th Street up into Chinatown, Washington, D.C.'s Chinatown. And so I am in full, I mean, I'm wearing a headdress and I'm wearing like, you know, leggings and a chest plate and everything else that falls in line with this stereotype that I dress up as. And as we're walking, somebody saw me and they started making those noises.
I said, God bless you.
It's offensive. It's pretty out there, but you know, in Washington D.C., I think it illustrates the education and the mindset that people have towards Indigenous people, which seems to all be informed by the Washington sports team.
What kind of conversations do you have with people when they do react in that way? Do you go and confront them? Do you talk to them about it afterwards?
No, I don't really confront people. I think I've confronted maybe one or two people in the 6 months or so that I've been working on it. And the reason for that is for the documentation reasons. You know, I the performance piece is not really me so much as it is the people I interact with. And so to allow people to act however they're going to act, that's the documentation process. But I came into contact with a couple of ladies once, and they were older women, and they started talking to me in just this romanticized way of, oh my gosh, you're so majestic and incredible. And then they started asking me what specific things on my outfit mean. You know, well, what does this choker mean? What are those feathers mean? What does this mean? And I flipped it on them, and I started asking them, like, you know, what, how does this necklace that you're wearing, you know, represent your people? You know, what is the meaning behind the design on your shoes, and how does that go back to the tradition, you know, of your people? Which, when you flip it, they kind of looked at me sideways because they couldn't understand that. But it illustrates how people are interacting with Indigenous people, and if you actually interact with an other person, a non-Indian, the same way that people react or interact with us, it's actually kind of insane. And so it's a lot of it is just documenting it and allowing people to bring to the table whatever it is that they want to bring to the table.
Greg Deal, thank you very much for speaking with Making Contact.
Thank you for having me.
And that's it for this edition of Making Contact. If you want to see clips from Greg Deal's Last American Indian on Earth project, there are links on our website, radioproject.org. That's also where you can download a podcast, listen to past shows, or make a difference by supporting our work. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Our handle is making_contact. I'm George Lavender. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.